Welcome to Sourcing Enterprise AI, a podcast by Upper Edge. I'm John Belden, Chief Strategy and Research Officer.
And I'm Bill Ruffo, Chief Revenue Officer. Join us every other week as we explore the impact of artificial intelligence and the critical issues IT decision makers and sourcing professionals will face.
Get a deep dive into a particular AI topic and explore the latest news releases and their potential impact on the market to empower your AI decision making.
Hey, John, how are you?
All right. How are you doing today, Bill?
I'm doing great. So for anyone who hasn't listened to the first couple episodes here, I wanted to do a little bit of a recap here and provide some context as to what we've been talking about. I know the first episode we covered a lot of the research project that you and Upper Edge did relative to everything that's happening in the industry relative to AI, building a business case, technology strategy, data strategy, some of the operational models and sourcing and procurement strategies that go into it. Then took a turn into some of the terminology that we all think is really important for sourcing professionals to really understand and be aware of as they're talking to different vendors out there. So some of the fundamental terms like large language models or foundational models, terms around building generative models like GPT and training data, or even using AI models, right? So like hallucinations or jailbreak, right? Or some of the more tactical procurement terms like what is a token or what Copilot is, right? So as promised, though, wanted to start getting into a little bit more specifics relative to vendors here. And we're going to be talking about Microsoft, Salesforce, Oracle, et cetera. But since we just had a big SAP webinar, I figured that would be a really great place to start. Before we dive into that, though, I'm excited to introduce our first guest to the podcast. So Upper Edge's very own Chip Hanna and Michael Wessler. So welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
All right. So John and I get to talk to you both all the time. But for everyone that isn't familiar with you or what you do relative to Upper Edge, would you mind just doing a little brief intro on yourself and its relative perspective to SAP?
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. So I'm the SAP practice lead at Upper Edge. I've been here for about 6 years now. And I have primary responsibility for supporting our clients related to their SAP journey and transactions and whatnot. And then prior to Upper Edge, I had responsibility for setting up the IT vendor management function at Lowe's. And prior to that, had responsibility for IT contracts and compliance. And so, you know, being a practitioner before becoming a, you know, an advisor, I think has been helpful for us in our journey as far as, you know, assisting customers and knowing kind of both ends of the fence as it relates to how we support them, advise them, and kind of been there and done that. And we see how that resonates with our clients as we dig into these major transactional events with you know, both large and small customers. And so I've obviously enjoyed the ride so far and looking forward to speak with you guys today.
Yeah, good morning, Bill. So I'm Michael Wessler. I'm a senior manager within our SAP practice. Been with Upper Edge for about 2.5 years. And like Chip, held a IT sourcing role at Lowe's Home Improvement. I've also held similar roles at large companies like NCR, Kroger, and Ernst & Young. So my responsibility largely revolves around not only helping you know, with client delivery, but also doing research to understand kind of the latest trends with SAP and keeping up to date around, you know, not only the trends with SAP, but also where we see customers you know, benefit from our benchmarks and our intelligence related to you know, their commercial offerings.
Awesome. Thanks. We really appreciate you both joining the show today. So as I just mentioned, we had a webinar. We just had a webinar on SAP transformations, sourcing in the age of RISE was the title of that. And so largely focused around strategy, SAP in general, cloud, systems integrators, managed services, et cetera. Hopefully you had a chance to listen to that. If not, you can head over to upperedge.com to get a download of that. But wanted to just quickly touch on that a little bit prior to jumping into you know, details on SAP and just see what any of your takeaways on the webinar itself were. Chip, I know you were on that webinar. So what were some of the major takeaways from that webinar?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the key takeaways that we have, and you know, and unfortunately, what we're saying out loud is the things that people have been thinking in their heads, which is essentially that, you know, SAP is truly, you know, a monopoly, you know, at best a duopoly with Oracle as it relates to major ERP providers. And they've really decided to you know, be overt about their position in the market and really take advantage of that related to their they're driving customers as far as what their platforms is going to look like, the timing, the investments they're going to make, and really kind of disconnect that from what clients' desires, roadmaps, desires related to their overall program. And it really is turned into more of a naked money grab as it relates to driving folks to RISE and to meet more focused on meeting their expectations with the vendor community than really collaborating with and partnering with their customers. And I know that that sounds pretty pejorative, but that's really what we're seeing. And we'll talk a little bit more here in a little bit as it relates to how SAP is addressing AI in that context. But I think overall, that's what we're seeing in the market related with SAP and RISE. And that kind of bleeds through the different transformational services that we see wound around that, whether it's your cloud strategy, whether it's your implementation, then ultimately your AMS services. SAP driving the train as it relates to folks' roadmap and timing related to RISE has a lot of downstream impacts that we talked about. And there's also a lot of unintended consequences if you don't have your head around all the different decisions you need to make in a timely manner, because taking them in a serial approach and not being holistic can be super impactful as it relates to your future.
Yeah, that's for sure. Michael, why don't you take us into, let's start talking about SAP specifically here relative to AI. And Chip just mentioned, they're overtly kind of taking advantage of their position in the marketplace here. What have they communicated thus far regarding their plans with AI?
Yeah, sure. So, we've been following this very closely really since the Sapphire conference in May, where they placed a very heavy emphasis on AI. And also they rolled out some information around enhanced partnerships that they're looking to leverage really to take their AI capabilities to the next level. So at Sapphire, like I mentioned, they brought out partners such as Microsoft and Google, and they discussed, what they were doing with those partners. And we'll touch on that in a little bit. And then afterwards, they also talked about, some investments in AI companies that they were looking to to partner with, basically to take their capabilities to the next level. So, like I mentioned, we've been following this since Sapphire. They've had a number of announcements that have come out since. I think perhaps the most notable announcement, at least in our field, was around their Q2 earnings update, where Christian Klein, their CEO, mentioned basically that the new green ledger and net new kind of generative AI capabilities will basically be only delivered through RISE and GROW. And not only this, but it's going to come at a 30% cost premium. So they haven't really provided a lot of information around that. As you'd expect, there's been a lot of uproar in the marketplace around, that cost uplift and also what it means for companies who aren't looking to go down the subscription route, and also customers that have already signed up for perpetual deals. They've basically promised to have an update in the very near future. I know we're keeping a close eye on that. Our clients are too, but obviously we're very interested to see kind of the value that they can expand on in terms of what this premium package will provide and basically how they intend to embed AI in a way that will be worth the 30% premium for our clients.
You mentioned a couple times there partnerships, and what are we seeing as far as how we think SAP is going to go about this? I mean, they're doing it strictly through partnerships, investments. What does that look like?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. Like I mentioned at Sapphire, they rolled out Microsoft and Google. They've also formed a deeper partnership with IBM. So some of the things that they're doing, IBM specifically, they're looking to embed, Watson technology within their capabilities. Google specifically, they're looking to leverage, the Google Cloud platform and focusing on uniting the SAP software versus non-SAP data within Google Cloud to basically provide clients a more holistic view of their data sets to get better value from the Google Cloud and the SAP software investments. For Microsoft specifically, they're also looking to integrate some of Microsoft's existing capabilities around, the Copilot capabilities and Azure's OpenAI service to enhance specifically SAP's SuccessFactors solutions. So they've made very kind of clear, definitive positions in terms of how they're going about enhancing their capabilities via these partnerships. But then on the flip side, they're also making heavy investments in AI companies, ranging from startup companies to established AI companies. So one area in particular, SAP has a backed company called Sapphire Ventures, where recently they announced a $1 billion commitment to invest in the next generation of AI startups. So SAP, through this joint venture, or this backed venture, I should say, is obviously looking to expand upon their capabilities via these investments. And then SAP directly made a couple investments in three different leading AI companies that have already been established. So we expect, you know, SAP to focus on these enhanced partnerships and future investments going forward as they seek to position themselves as the AI software leader in the marketplace.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think everybody sounds like has to really stay on top of it, because there's going to be a lot of changes coming down the pipe as they continue to develop their strategy. You know, with all these partnerships, go ahead, John.
No, I was saying, this has been an interesting discussion so far, Mike, and with all these partnerships that, that are out there. I mean, how can clients, I'm going to say, not overbuy, right? Because if I've got a relationship with Microsoft, I got a relationship with Google, I got a relationship with AWS, they're all bringing kind of generative AI capabilities to the table along with SAP. I mean, what can clients do to protect themselves from, I'll call it, overbuying the same capabilities?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great question, because I don't think that it, at least with SAP, and I'll speak to them specifically, they've not been really clear as it relates to the product level details that they have are going to be offering around AI, right? They speak about it and saying, hey, look, we've had AI embedded in BTP and some other applications and whatnot already, and we're going to come to market with some additional capabilities. And Michael talked about, you know, the alliance and partnerships they've made. But I think what's missing, and maybe this is, accidentally on purpose, is that truly understanding what it is that each one of these providers are going to provide at a detailed level is something that needs to be understood. To your point, John, am I buying duplicative? Am I buying complementary capability? But more importantly, clients need to understand what it is they need. And I think, you know, we talked about this a little bit, you know, prior to this discussion, John, and it's really, people feel like they need to have an AI strategy because it's a buzzword that's flying around, you know, CIOs and all that sort of thing. But no one really knows what that means for them and their business and what those requirements truly are. So it's absolutely a risk as it relates to understanding, you know, mapping what their requirements are to the extent they haven't developed, and then aligning that to the service offerings of the vendor community that they have in place.
Yeah, thanks, Chip.
No, Chip, let me ask you, because I know you talk to a lot of our customers on a regular basis with SAP. You know, relative to the experiences that they're having to date with SAP conversations, I mean, what are you hearing out there from our customers, specifically how it relates to, you know, SAP productizing it?
Yeah, so to take it down another level, I think what they are doing are depending on the level of maturity they have and the level of depth that they are being driven to come up with an AI strategy, other than just asking generically from SAP what that means. SAP has not provided in you know, a high degree of transparency into what their service offerings are. And, you know, Michael touched on this as far as, hey, look, they're going to wrap it into RISE. They're going to make customers pay a 30% premium. But as of yet, you know, SAP hasn't really fully explained, other than at PowerPoint level, you know, what that's going to look like. Customers believe that AI is something they need to address, but I think they're struggling with, truly, like I kind of talked about, you know, what is it they need to deliver and how it can actually be integrated with their business. I think the other key thing that we've heard is that not all customers are looking to SAP to solve their AI requirements. You know, a lot of them say, hey, look, you know, it's great that SAP offers this capability. They haven't been able to adequately explain it to us. And quite honestly, we don't believe they're the be all end all specifically related to AI, much like they have their own cloud strategy with like leveraging AWS or Azure. They are looking at sort of a superset of AI capability that may or may not include SAP.
Yeah. On that superset question, I guess, Chip is, and Mike, I mean, feel free to jump in, whoever knows this, right? I mean, part of me says, on the horizon, there's going to be kind of a parallel to this indirect access question of, well, if SAP's reaching into Microsoft or SAP's reaching into AWS and they start to use those tools, right, or vice versa, right, how are they going to be setting up those pass-throughs and what's going to be the, I'll call it the licensing engines or the licensing constructs that people are going to have to deal with in the future? Do we have any insights into that?
No, we don't. And I think it's a great question because, and I think it is a material risk because much like SAP has, I don't want to say penalized, but gone after clients who have chosen competitive platforms like Salesforce and Workday and Blue Yonder and so on, I fully expect SAP to monetize clients' use of non-SAP AI capability. It's just a natural byproduct of what they've already introduced with digital access, and fully expect them to figure out a way to monetize that use as it integrates with SAP's, you know, core capabilities in a way that cuts them out of that game. So I think that's has SAP announced that they're going to add another document type or another use case scenario to digital access? They haven't, but again, they haven't provided a point of view as it relates to the products generally. But I think it's something people absolutely need to be aware of as they start to get that out.
Yeah, so it's going to be at least it may be like a post processor to Chat GPT, right? Where you're actually using Chat GPT, but SAP is going to put a post on that thing, and whether they're going to do the prompt engineering on the front automatically or process the information out the back end, you know, SAP, in your opinion, is going to be putting some sort of value proposition on leveraging the output of Chat GPT or a like. A large language model.
Absolutely. And they do have some analogs with some of the digital access document types related to bots and some of the automated technology that clients and customers have related to, you know, field maintenance and those sorts of things where they have, you know, equipment with kind of call home capability and dispatch and break fix information. So I think the analogs exist. I think they're probably formulating how they're going to try to monetize that.
So help me understand a little bit too. I know we were talking about how SAP's kind of been a little bit quiet with what they've come to market with so far and you know, companies really needing to, what sounds like, anticipate a lot of what these challenges and needs and risks are going to be for their business, or at least relative to what they're trying to procure. Are there any other sort of anticipated risks that need to be on people's radar outside of what we just sort of ran through that people need to be really aware of or even further anticipate?
I think that beyond just the potential licensing or monetization of integrating with non-SAP AI is just clients or customers making bets on SAP's AI capability that may not be as mature as other product sets. And then I think we've seen where they've either acquired or developed their own capability. I'll use SuccessFactors as an example. SuccessFactors loses to Workday every day, all day, right? You know, are customers going to make bets and make investments in SAP AI that turns out to be, you know, and also ran as it relates to a market leader in developing and delivering that capability? So I think customers should be cautious and prove out what SAP is truly going to be able to deliver. And is it going to be the, you know, the best in class, you know, in the world related to what that capability is? Should they take more of a wait and see? And then again, like I indicated earlier, is clients just need to do a really good job of defining what AI means to them and what it is they need to deliver, as opposed to just saying, well, you know, my board of directors say I need to have an AI strategy, so I'm going to go out with SAP and just make an investment on products that have yet to be defined.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point, going back to some of the hype that you were talking about, where companies need to be sure not to just get caught up in some of the hype that all these vendors are coming out with, and make sure it's really in tune and aligned with, quite frankly, the direction of what the company actually needs. I think it's a really kind of important piece to be mindful of as, you know, as companies are working through these.
Hey, so Mike and Chip, you guys have provided a lot of good information in here on this today. I mean, are there things that, you know, we should be looking for in the future call it announcements from SAP or, you know, indicators that maybe SAP is ready to put a pricing model out there that's going to stick? Or, you know, what would be the signals, I guess, that maybe SAP is ready to do something? You know, how do our clients read the tea leaves?
Yeah, John, I think that's a good question, and we're wondering the same thing. So they've made commitments that they're going to release more details behind their commercial model and the impacts of this new Rise Premium and Grow Premium solution to the marketplace. That has yet to be fully defined, and I know, you know, some of our customers have received confusing answers from SAP directly in response to the status of this model and future details. So I know SAP has, you know, their Q3 earnings that will be released, and we're anticipating, you know, hopefully some updates from SAP, but if not, some questions from the investors to get some clarity around that specifically.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I would be looking for, Mike and Chip, as well, is SAP going to start to talk about, let's call it, the percentage of their revenue that is coming from generative AI. I mean, you know, the Oracle, Larry Ellison's kind of laid that out there, that said, hey, X percentage of our revenue is being, you know, created by generative AI. Accenture just announced their earnings release, and I think the number was close to $500 million was coming from generative AI. And so I think there's going to be tremendous pressure within the marketplace as Wall Street looks at these companies to say, what does the revenue stream look like from generative AI? Much the same way as, you know, when everybody was talking about the cloud and people were talking about what cloud revenues were and everybody had to report on that. I feel like it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah, John, that's a great point, because one of the announcements that SAP has made to date is that they're expecting their AI to essentially double their addressable spend by 2028. So they've already released some announcements saying, hey, you know, our current addressable spend is around $500 billion. Leading up to 2028, they expect that to double up to $1 trillion. So obviously they're really kind of banking hard on, you know, the value that they may receive from a revenue standpoint with their new AI capabilities.
So, you know, Bill, I'd love to go off on a little bit of a rant here in terms of SAP and the value proposition associated with AIP, SAP. I mean, I could tell you, you know, you see it in the press all over the place, you know, regarding, hey, I'm not sure whether we want to move to the next version of SAP. I don't know if there's a value proposition associated with SAP. And when I look at it, it's interesting to me. Yeah, there's the value proposition associated with the application of SAP to your business processes and where that value might come from. But one of the things that isn't getting a lot of press, and I think purposely so, okay, is the application of AI to implement new versions of SAP and the potential for those prices and the implementation prices to come down dramatically. You know, just as an example, and if people do their, you know, their reading on SAP, let me just kind of tag through where generative AI can actually be put in place to support the implementation of AI, ERP, low code generation, right? SAP only spent 1 minute on this that I saw in Sapphire, which is, oh, look what we can do with AI to generate low code applications, and the users can do that themselves. You can use generative AI for creating training materials, for creating test scripts, for creation of functional designs on integrations, for cleaning data, right? To generate automated test scripts, to support the creation of documentation, to support code conversion from, you know, a legacy stack into a future SAP stack. All of those things, right, can be supported by generative AI. And conservatively, I would look at that and say, you know, the big SIs could cut 50% of the hours that they're applying to the implementation of SAP, right? They could cut their estimates ultimately by 50%. And I think somewhere down the line within the next year to 2 years, that's going to come to fruition. if that's the case, right, then effectively you're cutting your implementation costs by 50% with SAP. If I can cut my implementation costs by 50%, that fundamentally changes the algebra associated with the calculation of the business case now, because I've cut my denominator in half. And all of a sudden, where there wasn't value, right, now there is value. So why is it then that SAP's not, you know, going out and saying with generative AI, right, you can reduce the cost of the implementation of this thing and people ought to be just lapping that up? I think part of the reason is it's going to eat their ecosystems partners, you know, their ecosystem partners' lunches, right? Because if I can put in SAP for 50% less, right, well, that's a 50% drop in the revenue of the systems integrator that was putting that in before. So why would they be out, you know, advocating and waving the banner when I'm going to actually create a bad relationship with my systems integrator as a result? Now, I think that bubble's going to burst, right? There is going to be some first movers within the industry itself that are going to go very quickly. Accenture's not putting $3 billion into generative AI just for their clients. You know they're investing in their own internal processes as well. And to me, that becomes, you know, I'll call it the really, really interesting question associated with generative AI and SAP is what's going to be the future enablement cost of this? Because I think it's going to be dramatically lower than it is today.
Yeah. Do you think a lot of that's driven by their own strategy is still developing and flourishing out into the marketplace right now?
Yeah, I think that's true on SAP, and I think it's true for PwC and Deloitte and Accenture. They're all kind of working on these things. In fact, we had one client, and I won't use any names here of any of these partners, right? But we had a client recently that the systems integrators offered them $5 million worth of implementation credits if they would act as a flagship customer for their Gen AI, right, enabled implementation processes. So we know that it's coming out there right now, right? We know that it's on the market. And, you know, I'll be really interested to see where we're at a year from now. And, you know, when people are saying we're not sure what the business case is for the implementation of SAP, we're going to be in a different seat saying, how fast can I actually enable that now because the costs have so much dramatically dropped?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really wild to sit and be involved in so many conversations and SAP is trying to figure it out. All the customers are trying to figure it out at the same time. I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of stuff to be figured out on the fly.
Yeah. No, I, like I said, to me, it's, you know, I can't wait to see how the story ends and this, you know, the story is going to change. Every chapter is going to change as we go down this path. You know, every quarter, I think the story is going to look a little bit clearer, but at the same time, the horizon is going to look a little bit farther away.
Awesome. Well, really appreciate it. Michael, Chip, thank you both very much for joining us on the call here today and talking about some of your expertise relative to SAP and what we're seeing out in the marketplace and with our customers. So really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, so as we always do at this time, switch gears a little bit. And this is a segment where we often talk about some of the different news items or interesting articles that we found out in, you know, the internet the last week or so. John, what have you uncovered?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of them, Bill. I mean, one I've already mentioned, right, which is the recent announcement where Accenture has come out and said on the you know, the amount of revenue that they've created from generative AI, right? And they've thrown that marker out there now. And because they've thrown that marker out there, they're going to be expected to report on that on a quarterly basis going forward. So that's something, at least from my standpoint, is something that we're going to be able to keep our eye on now from a progress standpoint within the marketplace, keeping our eye on that. Now, one of the things that Julie Sweet said was that this is being that Accenture's deals are largely based upon small million to $2 million kind of investigation deals. So they're really, really small. They haven't launched the huge generative AI big deal yet. but I would expect that we're going to see those on the horizon, and I would expect Accenture is going to have those on the horizon. They're converting 40,000 of their internal resources, going from 40,000 in AI to 80,000 in AI, in anticipation that those revenue streams are going to be there. So to me, it was interesting that she put out there that marker and said, okay, now measure me on it.
Yeah.
That one, I guess the other one I saw too was obviously the new release of ChatGPT-4 and the multimodal capabilities. I'm not sure if it's out there yet fully in general release, but some of the examples I've seen where people are taking flow charts and turning it into code just by going through the taking a picture of their bulletin board and all of us are on their marker board and then turning that into code. I mean, it's pretty remarkable, right? It just makes you It just makes you sit there and go, holy crap.
Yeah, well, like we always talk about, it seems like there's something in the news every week that we say holy crap to, and it's constantly evolving and changing, and like we just heard from Michael and Chip, it's why we got to constantly be talking to our customers and figure out the direction and strategy. So that's great. Well, look, that's all for today. So really thank you, everybody, Michael and Chip, for participating, and everybody for listening in here. Continue to stay connected to us, and as we continue to explore what some of the different vendors are doing in this landscape.
Thanks again, guys.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Sourcing Enterprise AI is co-hosted by John Belden and Bill Rufo and produced by Mike Brown and Kylie Chisholm. The podcast is brought to you by UpperEdge, a leading IT sourcing, negotiation, and project execution advisory firm. Make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss a new episode. For more innovative IT sourcing and risk mitigation insights, subscribe to the UpperEdge newsletter and follow UpperEdge on social media at the links in our episode description. Thank you for listening.